Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the suburbs of New York City, an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
How are you, sir?
Doing well. Doing very well. Surprisingly well, given, I guess, some of the events of the past few days in this sport here in this country.
Things have hurt you in this sport, and we're going to get to them.
We certainly are. This was a, as far as international breaks go, this was a pretty eventful one. So we will talk about everything that went down with both the senior team as well as the under-23s.
Could you say we've both been humbled somewhat? It's rare that both of us have been humbled on the one podcast.
Yeah, although I'd say that that's become a more increasing occurrence this season.
The humblings.
Both domestically. And not, I mean, look, internationally, I would say the U.S., like I still feel pretty good about American soccer. So this was kind of like an island of humbling in a sea of success.
Well, okay. If you're on Humble Island, briefly.
What a place.
You're on Humble Island, but you're only on a 2-week vacation.
Okay.
I am building a condo on Humble Island.
Oh yeah.
I am there.
A continent, quite frankly.
Quite frankly, yes. I am starting my own camp. I am inviting people to join me on Humble Island. That is where I've taken up residence.
I don't envision a Humble Island being a very enjoyable place to live.
Well, I've been there for a few days now, and the fact that I have to spend or will spend quite a considerable amount of the future there, it would seem, is it's not good to me. It's better than the abyss.
Yeah, everything's better than that. I picture on Humble Island a lot of people just walking around complimenting one another, but then refusing to accept the compliment.
Yeah,
I love what you're wearing today. No, this old thing, no.
Have you lost weight? No, I'm fat. I'm really quite fat.
Sounds like a really fun place. So we'll talk about life on Humble Island for the under-23s. We'll also talk a little bit about some of the World Cup qualifying going on in Europe right now in UEFA. And then I guess we'll kind of come back in with a quick sort of refresher course as the domestic leagues return this coming weekend. So we'll just kind of like re-catch you up to speed for the final stretch run here for the Premier League, La Liga, Bundesliga. You also have a mailbag. One of the questions seems like a subtle attempt at gathering my thoughts on a recent Grant Wall tweet.
Oh.
No, you didn't see that when we get to that question in the mailbag, we'll.
I wasn't thinking about Grant at all when I compiled the mailbag.
Felt like a sub, what do they call it? Subtweeting?
Oh, subtweeting.
When you're kind of like, not directly referencing someone, but you're also referencing that person in your message. Well, you'll see. This will all make sense in due time. Don't worry, everyone. But let's start, JJ, with the eventful weekend for the U.S. men. And I guess let's start with the bad. It's rare that the under-23s trump the senior team, but that was certainly the case on Sunday when, yet again, the under-23s fail to qualify for the Olympics for the third consecutive cycle. And once again, it is Honduras playing the role of spoiler. That was a tough watch.
It was incredibly tough, Andrew. But I would challenge any U.S. soccer fan to get to the end of that game and think that Honduras did not fully deserve to go to the Olympics. I think that's the first thing I'd like to say. A couple of people got upset when I said it's amazing that the second most impoverished country in Central America is going to the Olympics again. I think that's an amazing achievement. And that can stand alone outside of the issues or the perceived issues that we have with the US program. First of all, Honduras in that first half, they fought incredibly hard. They were to the pitch of the game in a way that the US were not. They got their goal at a crucial time. It wasn't a pretty goal, but I mean, they didn't score a pretty goal in the game.
No,
but they scored two. And then to score again on the Ochoa mistake, right at the beginning of the second half was a sucker punch for the US. Jackson Ewell did respond with a golazo from distance. But I mean, yeah, this was a pretty horrifying performance from the 23s overall. But I'll be honest with you, Andrew, this was a... I watched every game of this Olympic CONCACAF qualifying, and I don't think they were convincing in a single game, not one game. They had two shots on target against Costa Rica in a 1-0 win, where the consensus was that Ochoa, our goalkeeper, was man of the match. 0-0 at halftime in the second game against the Dominican Republic. It took an hour for the US to break the deadlock through Jackson Yule. Beaten 1-0 by Mexico, okay, but one shot on target. Mm-hmm. And then the Honduras debacle.
Yeah, that's all very fair to say. In terms of the sticking to the Honduras debacle specifically, boy, I thought it played out in almost a shockingly similar way to the 2017 U.S. men's senior team against Trinidad. Like falling into the two-goal hole,
yeah,
with one of the goals coming on just like a horrifying semi-fluky mistake. And then a goal early in the second half from the Americans' best player against Trinidad. It was Pulisic. This time it was Yule, to give them some hope. And then not much after that. And it just kind of petered out and ended 2-1. And I mean, everything you say is true. And the hot takes have been flying fast and furious from everywhere on why this happened. You know, people have talked about the decisions made for this roster, whether or not Jason Kreis was the right man to lead this group at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, in the end, I would say I'm not going to tell anybody that any of these individual thoughts on why this happened are wrong. I think everything is fair to come under criticism right now. One thing that I am having a bit of an issue with that we heard often back in 2017 was the issue of arrogance, that the US's arrogance, their hubris, that's what was keeping them out. They think they're better than everyone. And I saw that being parroted once again from, this is at ESPN FC. After the United States men failed to qualify for the Olympic Games on Sunday, former Mexico national team assistant coach Mario Carrillo said he felt the U.S. made a mistake to not include the core of promising players under the age of 23, including Pulisic, Adams, McKinney, and Dest. He then went on to say, quote, "I think they were very arrogant." This was on Sunday's edition of Football Picante on ESPN Deportes. We can have a separate conversation about Pulisic, Adams, McKinney, and Dest not being on this team. I think that there are reasons for that, perhaps beyond control of what Jason Kreis and the U.S. setup would have wanted. The issue of arrogance, I don't know. I don't see that this time around. I think that that's a very comfortable narrative for people outside of the U.S. because of the way, honestly, this country is perceived oftentimes as being yeah, the arrogant nation of the world. I understand why that's an easy fallback for people when stuff like this happens. That is not the sense that I got. I don't think it was an over-arrogance. If anything, I wondered if it was almost the opposite, that this team was tentative, that they almost looked a little bit scared at times, that, you know, it was like there was this doubt that kind of settled in the back of their minds that prevented that. Like, I didn't think this was just, this did not look like them taking their opposition lightly. This looked like a team that was kind of thinking about all the things that could go wrong.
I totally agree with you. Tentative is the word. Scared at times is a better word. There was lots of times where you thought, you know, why aren't we on the front foot? Why aren't we taking the games to Honduras? Because there was a fear there. Now, was that fear because, you know, there was an inherent belief that this team actually isn't as good as people thought it is? Maybe there were selection issues. I mean, at times, for example, I don't think Kreis knew his best 11, and that's a problem. That's a real problem. Did he have time to get to know that? Maybe he didn't. There was some of the selection issues. If you go back to even the camp that he announced when Abobasi was left out, mm-hmm, you know, I mean, that seems like a strange decision. Now you had Atlanta obviously not allowing Miles Robinson at all to join the crew. Maybe if we had a better defender playing centrally for the US, that could have been different. But it wasn't arrogance. It's the same as someone tweeted this last night, that the thing that was missing from the US was heart. But like, these are intangibles. These are things that are up in the sky. The bottom line is they weren't very creative at all in this tournament. Like, there wasn't really one guy where you thought, well, he can unlock something. Unless it was Jackson Ewell scoring from distance or creating chances. It wasn't happening for this team in a number of the games. It's so easy to talk about arrogance, lack of heart, lack of passion, all those things. Sometimes it comes down to football. How is it that if you looked at the first half or maybe the first hour of the Costa Rica game and you saw Lewis on one side and you saw Vines and you thought, oh, you know, Vines is going to give us so much on that attacking left-hand side. And he was pretty much completely nullified by the tactics that Jason Christ used for the Honduras game. Like, I didn't even know he was on the field at times during this tournament. So there are other reasons beyond US arrogance or whatever else. Like, honestly, whenever anything bad happens to the US men's national team, that, you know, attracts the interests of the rest of CONCACAF, Central America, Europe, arrogance is always the easy thing to lean on. That's not true. There are tactical, formational, and maybe even personnel.
Absolutely.
Issues that go into this. And you know what? This is a team where we've hyped up a lot of these players because of what Brian Reynolds, Dest, or maybe not Dest, sorry, McKinney, the guys who have gone from the US, gone to Europe from MLS and succeeded. And we've looked at the next generation, the guys coming behind them, the guys coming behind Aronson. And maybe it's been a bit too QED for us. Well, they're going to be good too. And maybe they're not as good as those guys. And maybe that's why they're in MLS.
And kind of expounding off of that, like that is the problem with what this roster wound up being, is that not only was it, you know, is it the under 23s, but like, what would you say this was from an under 23 standpoint within the American soccer structure right now? The C team, the D team?
Well, exactly. Well, that's what you're into. I mean, how many of these guys are going to get on the? I mean, let's be honest. In the current,
there are players on this team that will not sniff the senior team.
Absolutely. Like, do you honestly think? Look at the center backs, an area of concern, we'll say, for the senior team. Kessler and Ladd will not play for Berhalter. I would be only in the event of injuries will they come into the running. Jordi Mihailovic has played for the seniors and wasn't terribly impressive. Isn't hugely, he's not ripping up trees at MLS level, never mind the international stage. So this is your B. What, like, maybe what were we expecting?
Well, now, yeah, that's a great question.
The other point, I'm going to do a classic Seinfeld, Larry David. Having said that, You look at some of the clubs where Honduras were pulling their players out of, you know, it's not exactly top level. And we constantly talk about the development of MLS. Every single one of those players on the U.S. men's national team, they're not college players anymore. It's not the old Alexi Lalas team of 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, they're full-time professionals.
Well, that's right. And that's the only reason that everything you've said so far, I wholeheartedly agree with, until you said, what were we expecting? I still think, and this, I don't think this qualifies as arrogance. I think it's reasonable that we still expected to at least be able to qualify.
Yeah.
No one said, we did not come on this podcast and say that this was going to be a cakewalk. No. I don't think that was ever the expectation, but I do believe that it was fair for American fans to think that this team, for whatever flaws they had, was still good enough to be able to qualify.
Jason Christ had things to say about why the game went awry against Honduras.
I think the first half looked a lot like the Dominican Republic first half. We have players that aren't moving. We have people on the ball that aren't committing defenders to make decisions, to open up spaces. We have guys that look like they just don't really want the ball. And so, you know, again, it just kind of goes back to mostly mentality for me. That's my opinion right now. And I could have it wrong, but, you know, I think at the end of the day, it just wasn't quite there from a confidence point of view.
So he's an interesting figure in this, because I would say that over the last 48 hours, no one has gotten crushed more than him. No. People have come out of the woodwork to question not just his appointment as the under 23 manager who was going to see them through, but like now it's almost become a referendum on his time at NYCFC and Orlando City as well. People are going back and
I think
looking
that referendum
at like,
was decided now.
But here's what I'll say. People who have listened to this podcast long enough probably know my sensibilities by now when it comes to manager versus players. I think I tend to value the player's role in this more than a lot of people. And having said that, Jason Kreis is going to have to wear this. This is a stain on his legacy 100%, but I don't think he's wrong in his criticisms of his team. Like I think that at a certain point, players have to respond to certain situations. They have to do the things that they're being instructed to do. And Kreis, he is certainly not without fault. I can't stress that enough. But you know, I do believe also that a lot of people have kind of put this on him and are almost allowing this group of players to skate by, sort of like, and I know this isn't what you mean. I'm not trying to put words or thoughts in your head, but a little bit of the sentiment you expressed of the, well, look at this roster. What did we expect? And I'm here to say that I expected more. And I think these players did not perform. I think all the things he said in that laundry list of critiques, players who looked tentative, like we said,
didn't move,
didn't have confidence. You know, again, that's partially on the manager to instill those responsibilities and qualities within his team. But these players, they came up small as well. He's right in the things that he's saying.
Yeah. I tend to think that if players aren't moving, if they're not playing in the patterns that you want, you do have to look at yourself. And I'm sure he is, and saying, well, I clearly didn't communicate my ideas to them in a manner that they could absorb and execute. And but then again, you know, there was times, I think, you know, you look at Tessman. When Tessman came into the game on the left wing, I thought he had a really, really good impact there and gave the U.S. an ability to go past players wide. And if Lewis could have sorted his feet out, you know, that game finishes that, yeah. You know, we take it to extra time and it's a different game. I think overall Honduras deserved to go through. I mean, equally right before the Jackson Ewell goal, Honduras passed up a brilliant opportunity to make it 3-0. I suppose now the question really is, and it's, I was reading it here that you put on our, it's always fabulous, our rundown, but I mean, it is the pertinent question. In the overall scheme of things, does this even matter?
That's a deep philosophical question.
Well, allow me to have a hack at it.
Okay.
I'm not sure that it necessarily does matter that much, because ultimately, what is the Olympic team there for? It's there to build the senior squad. You know, it's there to give tournament experience for the senior squad. And the people who talk about it mattering insist on the importance placed on it by other nations, South America in particular. And if they think it's important, if Brazil think it's important, so should we. It's a way of having a group of players together bonded in a tournament over a month that will stand us in good stead for the big one, the World Cup. And then there's the fact that there's only a couple of major tournaments you can qualify for if you're the US. Right. Forget the Gold Cup. It's only the World Cup after that, and maybe the odd invitation to the Copa America. And it's important to note who's most upset by this non-qualification. The opinionators in US soccer. Alexi Lalas, an Olympian 30-odd years ago. Stu Holden, also an Olympian in 2008. When they tell us it's important, it is because it was important to them in that era. But compare and contrast the state of US soccer then versus now. Like in 92, there was much more interplay between the Olympic and senior FIFA men's squad. I mean, they were one and the same. And in 08, I would say less so, increasingly less so, but still a huge interplay between the two squads. Can we really say that now?
No.
No, we cannot. We have 10 players lining out this season in the Champions League. We've never had that before. Mm-hmm. So things have changed from 30 years ago. And we're going to have this squad of elite players, or most of them, together for the Gold Cup. Now, I hear what you're saying. Oh, the Gold Cup, you know, it's not the same standard. But, you know, We've Olympic, rather World Cup qualifiers in the fall that are absolutely crucial. And we will have had our elite players, not the Olympic 23s that tried to qualify in CONCACAF, but the full squad together over the summer prior to World Cup qualifying. That's good enough for me.
Yeah, I think people have to compartmentalize a little bit the meaning of this, because you're right. This is, I suppose it can be an indictment somewhat on maybe the depth that we thought we might have had, that maybe we're now seeing, well, okay, our A and B is good, but maybe that's, we're not, we can't dig as deep into the pool as we thought we could and still be able to qualify for this tournament. So, you know, that's something. But you're right. This is, in, to me at least, it is not really an indictment of the state of U.S. soccer as a whole. In terms of young talent, this is about as bright of a period as I think we've ever, ever experienced. So, you know, you can certainly be disappointed for this team not qualifying for the Olympics and for you not being able to, you know, have them as part of your Olympic viewing. Like that, of course, in itself is disappointing. I guess I would go a little bit further than you, though, and say, sort of building off of one of the things you said, that, like, look, as a nation, we don't have enough tournaments of significance to brush this tournament aside, to say that the Olympics don't matter. Like, you know, in Europe, you guys have, like, the Euros, and qualification for the Euros is vital, and World Cup, obviously, World Cup qualifying, like, you know, those things in itself are huge, and on this level that the U.S., we don't really have enough of those things. We have the World Cup, and then, like you said, the Gold Cup is fun, but it doesn't rise to that level. So I don't think we're in a position to look at any sort of tournament of any level of significance and say, oh, that doesn't matter. Like, who are we to say that? And on top of that, we don't have enough wins under our belt to say that qualifying for the Olympics doesn't matter. Oh, let the smaller nations play in the Olympic pool. We're above that. We're not.
No.
We're not. So, like, yeah, I just don't see us as being a nation that can kind of, like, scoff at these things. I think we have to take all of these things seriously.
I'm not scoffing. I'm just giving the view that I think, you know, it's not great that we didn't qualify for, that this group didn't qualify for it, but, like, we'll be okay. You know, I think that the key components of what we were missing in those years of barrenness for this program were not, you know, it wasn't Olympic qualifying that was the difference. It was having players playing at the highest level possible in Europe. And now we have that. That's the big part of it. And those guys couldn't play in this tournament.
Correct.
They couldn't play in qualifying. So, and you know, they were in Belfast and they were wherever they were in Austria playing friendly games. Okay.
I wonder if some of the reaction to this, like the anger, like you said, some of it was deeply personal for guys like Maurice Adu. You know, he also, like Stu Holden and Alexi Lalas, he also spoke about his Olympic experience in the post game, and he talked about how vital it was to his success to go on and then be a key performer in Europe. You know, that he really took the experiences of playing in that tournament, and it was massive for his development. You know, so for some of those guys, it's personal in a way that it's not for the fans. I almost wonder if for a lot of the fan outrage, it's a couple things. One, it's disappointing because it would have been fun. Two, it's slightly embarrassing to once again for a third cycle, when this was the one where we were finally of the mindset of, okay, enough. Like now, like this was the one where now we do care. The other two, I think it was a little more fleeting whether or not fans truly cared. I think this is the one where everybody was like, okay, it's time for U.S. soccer to rise to the next level. So I think that was the gut punch. And then the other one too, I mentioned Trinidad before. I feel like this to a much lesser degree, but like, until the next World Cup occurs, or until the U.S. men qualify for the next World Cup, the wounds of what happened at the last World Cup are still going to be there. And I think this brought back some of those similar feelings to a lesser extent. Like Trinidad that night, like they took a pipe to our legs and broke our legs. This was Honduras coming back when we thought that leg was healed and kind of just like kicking it and us realizing, ow, hey, like we're not healed yet. This still hurts. So I wonder
what
if
is
like
this Grand Theft Auto?
So I just, but you get what I'm saying though, right? That like, I just wonder if there were certain similar feelings to what happened that night in Trinidad and Tobago that kind of like reawoke within an American fan base that thought we had kind of moved on from that feeling.
Yeah, sure. And there is a cohort in the US soccer sphere ecosystem that loves bashing on the men's team. Don't forget that either. It's a fun thing to do.
Not for me.
No,
I did not enjoy this. So yeah, it will be another Olympics without the U.S. men. The U.S. women will once again be carrying the weight for American soccer, as they have been known to do. So that will still be immense fun, because obviously that's the senior team and they take that tournament extremely seriously. And so I still, for the American soccer fan, you're still in for a fun Olympics. It just would have been fun to have them both to watch.
It's also how many tournaments can this team play in one summer?
That's a good question.
Gold Cup, Olympics, and the Olympics would crash then. They wouldn't crash into, but there would be very little time with clubs, and then bang, straight into a fall series. And the fall series is everything. World Cup qualifying is everything.
Here's what's going to happen. I think that we can roll our eyes at it, but I think Berhalter is going to bring his A squad for the CONCACAF Nations League. Then I think he will give those players a break for the Gold Cup, and you'll see a lessened, reduced, B/C team for the Gold Cup. And then I think obviously once World Cup qualifying hits, like that has never been more important.
Oh my God.
Than it is now. And then you will obviously see the A plus, like whatever stops they can pull out for that, like that is what they'll be gearing up towards. But I think the CONCACAF Nations League will serve as the rehearsal for the World Cup qualifying, and then Gold Cup will take a step back.
This is a balancing act. It really is.
But there are enough players where they could have balanced an Olympic run as well.
Okay.
They could have done. I believe that the pool is large enough where I'm not saying we would have medaled, but they could have done it. But let's go to that now, or not that. Let's go to the senior team now and look at how the most recent set of friendlies went for this group. They won a couple of the two. So, that of course is a positive. Should we do our kind of usual stock up, stock down type look at this?
Yeah, I would just have just a quick few comments before we get to that.
Yeah, sure.
Jamaica game played out as we thought it would. Weakened Jamaica, US dominant, enlivened by a supreme performance by Sergiño Dest on the left-hand side. Forced as he was to come in on his right and then bury an unbelievable goal,
yeah.
Which, in terms of trying to find balance in the side, that was interesting. Left or right for Dest, he can be effective in both, in an attacking sense at least. Then I thought Brendan Aaronson coming into the game was good. Thought Pulisic had an excellent game. Didn't feel like it was a chore or a tough game. Very comfortable. Northern Ireland, a different kettle of fish. Caused plenty of problems in the first half, and I'm not sure about that three at the back system that was employed by Berhalter, especially when there was turnovers in midfield. US dominant in the second half and overpowered the North, apart from that wonder goal by McGinn, which was helped somewhat by US defending, but a very good second half against a fairly... It was an experimental North team in some ways, but in other ways there was experience in there and the like of Lafferty and McGinn too. So I identified that game as a game that was worth watching, and I thought the second half performance was very good from the US.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, you mentioned Northern Ireland. It is worth at least pointing out that they were in between World Cup qualifiers.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course. So yes.
But I'm not trying to throw cold water on it, but I think that that's at least part of that.
They still were able to produce a system and a team that gave us problems in the first half. So,
yeah, overall, in terms of certain players' performances, decisions that were made, I have a few players here, and a little bit more than that, that I felt good about coming out of this. I'll be upfront with you right now, in terms of stock up, stock down. I actually don't really have anything in the way of stock down.
I do.
Okay, then I'll leave that to you, but I'll run through some of the things that I come out of this feeling good about. Some of these are obvious. I'm going to start with Christian Pulisic, just because I thought he was really good in this. And not that I didn't expect that, but I guess I would just say it kind of, I guess I found it encouraging that even in a time when he's not getting regular minutes at his club, he can still step right into this US side and be the player basically that we expect him to be, the captain, the best player on the field for us. You didn't really see signs of rust for not having regular time on the pitch at Chelsea. I thought that was good. Greg Berhalter talked about him after the Northern Ireland game. He said, forget about all the great stuff he does on the ball. He just competed today. And when he's in that type of mode, you know, he's just an unbelievable player. And that's what I was most happy with today. It was his relentless pressing. He just kept going and going and going. And then, you know, he's so good on the ball, he can unbalance the team. And to me, he had an overall really strong performance. He drew the penalty. He then converted the penalty. By the way, I wouldn't say that the penalty he converted was a great penalty. Thought he was a little bit fortunate to have scored it, but it counts the same as if he had buried it in the side netting. So
yeah, low and hard. It was very, very central. All it needed was a foot to be stuck out, and then he was in trouble.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't take penalties. I guess, you know, this is the time to experiment and, you know, find out if he can be the guy who takes them for you. But off of that first one, even though he scored it, I don't know that I'm convinced is him being our go-to penalty taker. Beyond that, a couple others here, somewhat like a couple of the other obvious candidates before I get to my sort of alternative candidates for stock up. Like you mentioned, Dest looked good, loved his goal. I really liked what I saw from Aaronson, not just the goal that he scored against Jamaica, but the runs he makes, the spaces that he creates in the field, like he did for Legette's first goal against Jamaica. They highlighted that on the broadcast, the way he kind of dragged defenders with him and kept the space open for Legette behind him. Yunus Musah, I thought, another really encouraging performance, especially against Northern Ireland. Kind of like, not to be overdramatic with the words that I use here, but like the courage that he shows in dribbling at opposition defenses, gets defenders to commit, create space. You know, he so far so good. Everything I've seen from him, I feel good about him. Now, JJ, the ones that I have here that might get people to roll their eyes a little bit. Kellen Acosta, I will mention here.
He's in your up.
And here's why.
Oh, for God.
I know. You're right. I know this is unconventional. I know people roll their eyes because he did not play well against Northern Ireland. That I could obviously see. But I don't want that to overshadow what I thought was a pretty good performance against Jamaica. We have to keep in mind, especially in the Jamaica game, but also in the Northern Ireland game, he's playing a position that is not necessarily natural to him. It's also his off season, which is not the case for pretty much every other player out there. He had one game where he looked good and then one game where he didn't. And I think that's somewhat understandable. And I felt like it was open season on him on US soccer Twitter as the Northern Ireland game was developing. And I kind of want to say to people, like, calm down. You know, this is like, he's not some of the other guys out there. He played a good game the other day, and we've now like completely forgotten about that because he made some mistakes against Northern Ireland, and they were probably asking a lot of him to play in both of those games, considering, like I said, it is his offseason. Berhalter said, I thought he was winning a lot of duels, positioned well, looked like he's played there a lot before. Really, really good performance by him, and it's great to see him take the next step from being a guy that hasn't been involved in these last 3 years to now working his way into it and having a good performance like he did tonight against Jamaica. And then I will also mention Berhalter, because he rarely gets positive shout-outs, I feel like, from the soccer fan base.
Andrew, I think this is...
Have I gone too far?
I think you have.
Why is that? Well, hear me out, and then you can decide if I've gone too far. Overall, unbeaten in their last 8 friendlies, 6 wins, 2 draws, outscoring opponents 27-5 in those games. The U.S. win over Northern Ireland, like we said, for whatever reduced Northern Ireland squad it might have been, our first road win against the European opposition since Germany in 2015. And look, generally speaking, I just feel like he's kind of doing the right things as manager right now. People were very critical of the decision to play 3-4-3. I understand it. And if you came out of this game feeling like you were vindicated in being skeptical of it, fair enough. But if not now, when? Like, aren't these the moments when you are supposed to experiment? I mean, we saw Jurgen Klinsmann basically doing these things in Gold Cup group stage matches. And people obviously killed him for that. Said, I wish he would do these things in friendlies before we got to a Gold Cup group stage. Well, this is the time. So, you know, I understand the desire to want to have a plan B, and I understand the desire to want to see it in action in friendlies. So I think, you know, even if you didn't like it, okay, maybe we won't do it again. But, you know, we have Anthony Robinson, we have Serginho Dest, we have a logjam of center backs. So I get him at least wanting to try it out and see if this could work. So, you know, I'm good with that. And also too, one other thing on Berhalter, they mentioned this, I think it was John Strong who mentioned it during the broadcast, where he said Christian Pulisic said that this is the tightest team of any team he's been a part of. Now, look, a lot of that comes down to the players and similar age groups, but I do think that a manager can help set a tone for togetherness on a team. And I think Berhalter is very good at cultivating relationships. He seems to kind of be like that sort of warm figure that maybe resonates in a way that a more stern older manager wouldn't. You know, he's kind of a younger guy who seems to relate to these players a little bit more. I think he just might be the right kind of coach for a young group. So
this is the first team that Pulisic's played on where he would be in a similar age range to most of the players. Mm-hmm. The teams that he came into originally were kind of much older.
Borussia Dortmund. I mean, obviously older than him. Generally speaking, that was a young team.
I'm talking senior team.
American?
Yeah.
I guess so. Although not necessarily over the last 2 years, since they kind of had their changeover. But I mean, I get what you're saying. But ultimately, I guess I wanted to give him a shout because this team has performed well over the last, you know, like I said, 8 matches. They have not lost. They've scored a lot of goals. And I think U.S. soccer didn't like him as the choice when he was announced as the manager of the team. And I feel like so far he hasn't really done much to make those fans feel like they were right in their skepticism, and yet the skepticism still remains.
Well, and that's not true either, though, because we've only had one round of we had the Gold Cup competitive game. We were shown up in that final by Mexico, so there was criticism there. You're gonna get it. And then we lose to Canada in the Nations League games. So like those are the two key competitive games. You're gonna get criticism there. I think he's doing an okay job so far. I mean, the problem for him is it's all front loaded towards one thing, and that's World Cup qualification in the fall. So I mean, that's where everything's going to be ultimately judged. I don't think I need to give my downs now because I think you've covered them. Acosta, I think for the position he was playing in the formation he was playing in against Northern Ireland, he gave away the ball too much. It was too sloppy. But again, there's mitigating factors for that too. One of which you said he's not in season yet. And if you're going to give the ball away, it's when you're not regularly playing games. Mm-hmm. That's when the sloppiness comes in. And I think three at the back, I'm not sure we have the personnel to do it. Miazga, Ream, and Long. I didn't like it. It just gives too many opportunities to be exposed when there's turnovers in the midfield, and also our wide players who are really are charged with filling in and creating a five defensively in that formation are not that inclined to do things like that. You're right. It was worth having a look at, but I'm. Maybe it's a personnel issue rather than the actual three at the back. But I think for now, I would shelve that one.
Yeah. I mean, look, if they were going to play it under normal circumstances, I don't think those would be the three in the back playing it. I mean, John Brooks is their best defender.
He has been quite – well, Brooks, okay. Brooks would come into that. We don't know would he be necessarily that comfortable in that. And he has been quite committed to Ream over his tenure over the past 2 years. So I don't know. Yeah,
that's fair. That's all fair.
And Sebastian Legette is his beloved child and shall always play.
I mean, look, I'm okay with that. I don't think that. Well, I was going to say once World Cup qualifying starts, I don't know that Legette. I think he'll be a sub. I think he'll be on the roster.
Depends. We're projecting into the future here because. You know, there could be an injury, there could be a knock, and he will be first man up.
I do wonder, too, when Jordan Morris will be deemed healthy enough to return.
That I mean, it's an ACL, Andrew, so not this year.
No, quite you don't likely. Think he couldn't get back for World Cup qualifying?
That would put, he got the injury last month.
That's tough.
I mean, he would be in the early stages. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, look, Legette scored twice against Jamaica.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
No, I'm only commenting that he really likes to rely on him. So,
there you go. Any other thoughts? I guess we'll see this team again. They do have a friendly lineup against Switzerland, I think, on May 30th. not sure what kind of squad they'll have for that, as domestic league seasons will have kind of just been coming to an end. Players may want to go on a break then, but I guess we'll see. And then CONCACAF Nations League after that. So we'll get a better look. Should we go look around the world a little bit? UEFA, JJ?
Yes, let's do that, Andrew.
So I want to give you this time here. I know you went on one of your walks.
Oh, God.
Over the weekend. You're dealing with a lot with the Irish national team.
Well, don't let me just rant. Ask questions, because otherwise I'll just rant and it'll be just a meltdown.
Okay. I really almost view this as an in the club.
It is kind of an in the club.
Yeah.
We might as well play the audio of what has me in such a state.
Okay.
Go, 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 go. Go, Sean. I'm in the club.
Towards DeVille and Rodriguez. O'Shea came between them. The here's Rodriguez. Hits it early. Oh, no. The gloom really does deepen for Ireland now.
I mean, there are some losses that I think you can accept more than others. You know, losing to Serbia was tough, 3-2. You know, for an Irish team that doesn't score goals, you got two and you still lost. But losing to Luxembourg, I think, that's different.
It is. And, you know, there was a bit of positivity coming out of the Serbia game. We took the lead. We scored a nice goal in that game. We had a system that kind of worked, albeit, you know, Serbia just had more quality in where it mattered and where it counted. And they were able to spring Mitrovic from the bench to kind of finish us off. And we never really got to grips with Dusan Tadic. But Luxembourg came to town. And this all begins for me. This story begins on Thursday evening, Andrew. So I'm on my way to New York for an appointment. I have an MRI on for my back, my lower back. I'm struggling with it. And I'm idly tweeting. And I noticed that England are playing San Marino. And they're hammering San Marino. So Gary Lineker tweets, shouldn't we have pre-qualifying for these teams? You know, just this kind of, every now and again, it creeps up this English arrogance. And so I kind of responded saying, you know, it's not so long ago that, you know, England were beaten by, no disrespect to Iceland, but a volcano, you know, a population of 300,000 in a major tournament 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. Iceland used to be a minnow. Look where they are now. They're very competitive. Albania used to be a minnow. They're a team that when Albania played Ireland in the World Cup qualifier in 1992 for America, we had to give them a set of jerseys, Andrew. They didn't have their own kit. So our kit supplier, Adidas, supplied them with jerseys. Look at Albania. They've been to a European championship since. So what am I getting at here? A couple of English people responded saying, yeah, well, you know, why should we have these teams in it? Surely they should pre-qualify. What's the point in just hammering them? And my point, well, you're not just hammering them. And I talked about Luxembourg. Luxembourg drew with France 4 years ago in 2017 in a World Cup qualifier, a World Cup that France would go on to win in Russia. Mm-hmm. They drew 0-0 with them. Pogba, Griezmann, Mbappe, Giroud, Kante all started in that game. So Luxembourg have been on the up. They've been developing. And then they rolled into Dublin on Saturday night and they shut down Ireland in a way that was hard to watch. It was very difficult. Ireland did have most of the ball. They had a good chance in the first half, but they really didn't create a lot. And then Rodriguez fired one past Gavin Bazunu in goal for Ireland. And suddenly you're facing into the abyss. And it's 10 games now for Stephen Kenny, Nations League friendlies, and now World Cup qualifiers. We've won 0 and scored just 3 goals.
So you said you wanted me to ask questions.
Yeah.
I do have a couple.
Okay.
I would say if brevity, maybe optimum here.
Okay.
Are we in the midst of an Irish footballing low point?
Yes. Okay. Yes, we are. I'm trying to think of results. We went to Liechtenstein in the last 18 months of Jack Charlton's reign, his golden decade for Irish soccer, and we drew 0-0. We had 40 shots and we couldn't score against Liechtenstein in the mountains. We lost under Stephen Staunton in the midst of a good generation of Irish players with poor management. We lost 5-2 to Cyprus. But like, those are the results in the last 20, 25 years that have been anything close to this. But the point being, Andrew, is that, and the point was made to me first in a tweet by my friend Wayne, a Welsh fan who knows his fair share of low points. Remember, when Ireland were good in the 90s, Wales were experiencing what Ireland are experiencing now. And he said, yeah, but JJ, the guy who scored the goal is the centre forward for Dinamo Kiev, and your goalkeeper is from Rochdale in League One. And that is a point that needs to be made. So this is a low point for Irish soccer, but these smaller countries have been developing while we've kind of been going backwards for about 20, 25 years. Now, people will say to me, well, your goalkeeper is actually, he's on loan from Manchester City and he's a good young keeper and he's 19. Okay. And people can also say, well, Stephen Kenny is trying to change the way this team plays. He's trying different things. And Andrew, he hasn't been able to, between COVID and everything, he hasn't been able to play a regular, like he wouldn't know what his preferred first 11 is because it's never been available to him. There's all those factors. And I believe we should stick with Stephen Kenny because he's trying to do the right things. But think of it this way. We're trying to play out from the back, pass through midfield. We may not have the players to do it. Luxembourg, Georgia, who almost got a draw with Spain. Luxembourg, Georgia, look at those teams. Like, they've been trying and developing for 20 years, while Ireland, what have we been doing? We've been mismanaged. We've had a football association that squandered money. You know, oh, well, hey, JJ, you qualified for the European Championships. It's just 5 years ago that you did that. Yeah, we did, but we finished third in our group and we had to go through a playoff to do it. You know, it was the first expansion to 24 teams in the European Championships. It fell kindly for us. This is former Ireland manager Brian Carr talking about the result, or talking after the result on Saturday night. Tonight just isn't down to Stephen's faults or the team's fault. This has been coming for a good while. This is the fault of a lack of proper player development structure and coaching structure in Ireland for many years. There has been a dearth of talent coming through from the teams. Suddenly, Stephen is pouring players through to the senior team from the 21s who were successful for him for about a year, but who aren't ready. There's no real quality or depth to that. That has been proven. And the people who are in charge of that development seriously should be looking at themselves tonight rather than just criticizing the manager. We know how the FAI has been run for years and years, but there's also been other people in charge of player development and the structures in charge of those players. It's been sticking out for a long time. It's been sticking out tonight. This is a low point, Andrew, but we've been on the way for about 20 years. And you know what? One stat came up regularly in across a number of different newspapers and podcasts that I listen to, that the US men's team has 10 starting players or 10 players in squads, Champions League squads this year. Luxembourg have a starting striker for Dinamo Kiev. Our starting striker was from Luton Town. This has been a decline coming for a long, long time. And now we've reached this moment. You know, there was a time when we looked down on the US, Luxembourg, Liechtenstein, Albania, when we were at a certain point. But those years are gone. And we don't have a league now. We don't have a domestic league that can develop players. We have started putting in a system that's going to mean that we will possibly have more youth players coming in the future. But where do those youth players have to go, Andrew? They have to go to England. Think of the way the US has it now with their academies and MLS. Like, Brendan Aaronson can go from the Philadelphia Union and straight into a European side. Look at what Tyler Adams did. Went straight into a Bundesliga team. We don't have that. We're trying to get our Irish players into crowded academies in England. And once upon a time, the foreigners in those academies were Irish. But now they've got the pick of France, Sierra Leone, you know, Switzerland, Italy, Spain. And we're competing against that. So here we are. This is years of mismanagement. And now we're trying to turn it around in 10 games under a manager who may not have the tools to do it.
So when you go on these walks,
what
is it? You just kind of put your head down and like think, or are you listening to sad music to try to meet your mood? Depends. Where do these walks take you?
Oh, I go all around Brooklyn. So I listened to a podcast yesterday specifically about what went wrong on Saturday night and what's been going wrong in Irish soccer for years. And I walk for about 5 miles.
Mm.
Yep. And other times I'm just like, I'll just put music on. But you know what?
I feel like we need to make a game out of this where you need to announce on Twitter when the walk is beginning. And like,
you track us.
Well, like the first person to spot you, like if they can like take a picture and tweet, like we'll get them some kind of like gift from the show or something.
Yeah, you get a text from like Gravesend, Brooklyn. He's here. Yeah.
Our own kind of Where's Waldo.
Yeah, walking's been huge for me lately. You know, I've lost 30 pounds since like November, December.
Really? You look about the same.
Such a...
Let's see. Well, I'm sorry you're going through this.
No. I think there is talent. There is some talent there. It's got to be managed right. Stephen Kenny needs a break. But
well, he's the coach.
Yeah, he needs a break though. He's never been able to pick his team that he wants to do, and
something needs to bounce his way.
Oh, you meant
like he needs a break from all of this.
No. No, but like firing him now paying what we've done in the past. Giovanni Trapattoni was on like $2 million a year when he was Irish manager for an international job.
Yeah.
That's insane. Martin O'Neill was on like 1.5, Roy Keane on 300,000. Or actually, I think I'm low balling Roy Keane there. So, you know, who are we going to throw the money at? Who's out there that's going to want to take this team? You know, we're trying to do things the right way, but this ship is going to take a long time to turn, much like the ship in the Suez Canal.
It turned though, right? The canal reopened.
Yeah. So that's my Ireland. That's my Ireland in the club.
Wow. That was dark. Let's see. A couple other things that stood out to me from Europe, JJ, during the international break. Robert Lewandowski suffering a knee injury. Ugh, it's a bummer for many reasons, but most of all for Poland, he'll now miss their most important fixture against England.
Yeah, that's huge.
And this comes after a 3-3 draw. They can only get the 1 point against Hungary. So
that is such a poor result.
Yeah. So the importance of some of these other games now ratchets up, and to not have him. So here's what's interesting to me. How often, JJ, do you see the words ligament damage in knee in the same sentence as expected to be out 10 days?
Yeah.
I mean, is this just like the most fortunate knee ligament damage injury we've ever seen?
No. I mean, so what can happen is you can bruise the medial ligaments. That could have happened. And that can heal pretty quickly, but it means there's no tear, which is good.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
There's no, I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen his MRI. We're talking about MRI. I haven't seen it. Imagine. And I feel like I should have access to all MRIs considering my injury history. But so I guess it's bruised ligaments, but yeah, it's a bad start. Speaking of bad starts, what about the Dutch getting trashed by Turkey?
Yeah. I mean, we talked about that.
We predicted it
before that game. We said we were like, that was the team that we identified as kind of like of the prominent European soccer nations. That was kind of the one that we were most concerned with. And they very much validated those concerns. That was terrible.
Yeah. And then
Frank De Boer,
they got the win. I mean, if he hadn't got that, I mean, they weren't exactly, you know, they won the game comfortably, but they didn't hammer Latvia. If he hadn't got that, I think he would have been sacked immediately.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And then Turkey going to beat Norway in Malaga, completely shut down Haaland and Odegaard and scored three. Ozan Tufan's second goal is just, they're under the cosh. They're in a low block. They're defending and they just break up the field and bend one into the top corner. And I mean, Norway, yikes.
Yeah,
I think we had Jan Agafjortoft on last week and he was worried about the balance in the side, and you can see his concerns. Also, Portugal's draw with Serbia causing the absolute meltdown of Cristiano Ronaldo. I mean, I understand it. when Dutch referee Danny Markele basically ruled out a completely legitimate goal. It was miles over the line, and that would have won the game for Portugal. And a team that we were talking about as, you know, dark horses or maybe even one of the favorites going into the summer and certainly going maybe going into the World Cup too, all of a sudden, they've eked out a win over Azerbaijan 1-0 and a 2-2 draw against Serbia.
Yeah.
You know, not great.
Yeah, and obviously the calls for VAR in these games have ratcheted up after that happened. We don't have to go down that road, but I do think if it's going to exist in domestic leagues, the importance of World Cup qualifying is certainly every bit but that.
This was a goal line technology issue.
Well, yeah, the fact that that doesn't exist is, you're right, is even more hard to comprehend.
But also I'm assuming there's sideline monitors and the fourth official can clearly see it. So all he has to do is have a word in the ref's ear and say, that's over the line, that's over the line.
Yeah. No, it's an incredible failure on a lot of levels. I don't know how that can be allowed to happen, honestly.
And there was also the protests started first by Norway, who asked for human rights on and off the field prior to their game against Gibraltar and against Turkey. And then the German national team had their own T-shirts asking for human rights prior to their game at the weekend.
Yeah.
So be interesting to see if FIFA institutes its fine on political or non-footballing statements on shirts.
Well, that will not be a good look.
Oh, well, it's their World Cup.
Yeah, so. I know, but it will not be a good look. One other that stood out to me, you mentioned briefly, but Spain. You mentioned them sneaking by Georgia.
Yeah.
Thanks to a stoppage time winner from Danny Olmo that went 2-1, but that came after a 1-1 draw against Greece. So not a good start at all for Spain in this World Cup qualifying. However, it is worth mentioning, I read the stat in the BBC that, JJ, Spain have not lost a World Cup qualifier in 28 years. Are you kidding me?
28 years.
I had to read that sentence like 7 times. It just seems almost impossible to fathom, but they're certainly testing the limits of that so far in this World Cup qualifying stage, because it has not gone well, even though they have come out of the first couple games with 4 points.
So help me with the math. 28 years ago would have been what? 92?
Let's see. So yeah, I guess, or no, it's 2021. So, all right, this is about to be very sad to watch us putter our way through what is really simple math. So 30 years ago would have been 91. So 28 years ago would have been 93, right?
Right. Their qualification, that was when Ireland, Denmark, and Spain were in the qualification group, and Spain and Ireland qualified out of that group for USA 94. Okay. That's the last time they lost a game.
That's incredible. I'll tell you what, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we got a quick refresher course on domestic leagues returning this weekend and a quick mailbag as well. Don't go anywhere. Oh, back now, caught offside on a beautiful Tuesday. JJ, I know sometimes we mention, we like to talk about the weather. Sometimes nature comes up on the podcast. I did want to tell you, now I do not live very far from New York City. I'm about 30 minutes north of the city.
And you're practically in Connecticut.
But I'm not. And by the way, Connecticut is also not far from New York City. But I'm not in Connecticut.
As well be in Boston to me.
But at any rate, I'm not very far from the city. And I looked out the window last week. Do you know what I saw running across my neighbor's yard?
A deer.
No.
Coyote.
No.
Bear.
No.
Raccoon.
No.
Dr. Henry Kissinger.
JJ, a bobcat.
No way.
Yeah, I actually got video of it.
How big is he?
What would I compare it to? I mean,
dog?
I'd say a dog. Yeah, not a golden retriever, smaller than that.
Holy
fairly small.
Crap.
Yeah, it was shocking. Now, I had heard from other neighbors that, like, I knew when we moved here, we knew that they are prevalent in the area. And neighbors of ours had seen them recently.
They're beautiful.
It was really something to see. Yeah. In terms of I've seen a couple bears before, but in terms of my nature spottings, this is up there. This was a big one.
That's it.
So I've been really celebrating it all week. It's been quite a time in my life.
I'm, oh my God. I've just Googled bobcats.
Yeah.
Oh, they're so beautiful.
It was really cool.
I had heard something about migratory patterns of big cats coming down like into urban areas, but I never heard that they come down this far.
Where were you reading about this? What do you like? You're some kind of expert.
All right. If you want to make me do this, you're going to make me do this, there was in Washington State, there was that terrible where a mountain lion attacked some cyclists. I think it was last year or the year before. And so I went into a wormhole about America's cats, America's wild cats. Hmm. And some of them do come down into urban areas searching for food.
Well, there you have it. Hmm. Let's see, JJ, quick refresher now on the domestic leagues returning. So the EPL this weekend, obviously we know Manchester City running away with it, ho-hum, whatever, wake me up for the next Champions League match. However, it is worth mentioning what we have kind of long suspected is now confirmed. Sergio Aguero is playing out his final season with City. A legendary career with this club. He scored the biggest goal probably in the history of that club and one of the biggest in the history of the Premier League. You could probably make an argument that it's the biggest if you wanted to. I guess JJ disagrees. We'll get into that another time.
It was an iconic moment because of the context of the game. Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. I'm not disagreeing with that. Richard Jolly had he's so good for his stats. This is your meaty stat of the day. Sergio Aguero at his peak had 6 straight seasons of 28 plus goals in all competitions. The previous player to do that in England was Jimmy Greaves.
Mm.
And it's weird. We've had this conversation before and I don't really want to go over old ground too much with it, but Sergio Aguero, when we start listing off, you know, the top strikers the last 25, 30 years since the start of the Premier League in 92 and obviously with Jimmy Greaves' name mentioned here, even going back further, we don't always say Aguero. And
no, we've often talked about how he kind of sometimes is
gets missed.
Yeah. But I think now that he's announced this, I think like the coronation of him being considered, you know, the debates will now begin as to where he ranks among greatest strikers in the Premier League.
For sure. Right up there would be the case. I think also as well, it's just another one of those things where, you know, with the amount of money pumped into City 10 years ago, he was one of those kind of marquee signings that they made.
You're right. And we kind of went through this period of time where we were uncomfortable with it. So we almost didn't want to give them credit for things.
But more than that, we were kind of like, well, that's what they should be doing. You know, they're spending all these money on these outstanding players. You know, what's the big deal kind of thing, which is unfair on Aguero in particular.
We'll talk more about that obviously as the season winds down. I'm sure we'll have, you know, a more in-depth look at his time at Manchester City and what will be next for him. In terms of some other points of interest for this weekend, Man United, Leicester City look like they're pretty well suited, I think, to qualify for the Champions League. It's not a lock, but they're in good spot. The battle for fourth should be fun, though. West Ham, Tottenham, Liverpool, and Everton all within 5 points of Chelsea, and Everton do have a game at hand as well. Then at the bottom, Sheffield United, West Brom, almost assuredly going down. Fulham just 2 back of Newcastle. Newcastle do have a game at hand on Fulham. So that will be a fun battle to watch. Brighton are kind of in that neighborhood, but right now I think Fulham and Newcastle are the two that I'm mainly looking at. A couple big games this weekend.
What's your gut telling you before you get to those games? What's your gut telling you for Fulham, America?
I have no idea. Right now I think they're playing better than Newcastle now. So I would tend to maybe lean Fulham, but it's that game at hand could be important for Newcastle, but I also don't really have faith in them to win it. So I don't know. Newcastle hosts Tottenham this weekend. I don't know. I think I'll lean Fulham right now.
I'm leaning Fulham too. Cause that's a crucial thing. I hope this break hasn't knocked them off their rhythm. That would be the concern.
Yeah. Also this weekend, Leicester City hosting Manchester City and Arsenal hosting Liverpool. A few big games to get you back into the swing of things. La Liga, JJ. So everyone has played 28 games in La Liga. So everyone has 10 games remaining. There's none of this games at hand nonsense. Atletico Madrid are on top still, 66 points, but Barcelona second with 62, Real Madrid third with 60. So not too long ago, it didn't look like we were going to have a race here. Now I'd say the race is very much on.
Oh, it absolutely is, Andrew. And I still fancy, I mean, the way they're playing, if you're talking just about pure performance level, it's Barcelona. You have to feel like Barcelona are going to overhaul Atletico Madrid, which I think a month ago we felt was unlikely. But they've just been putting these performances together. There's, I know the Champions League has been far from perfect for them, but there's an optimism there. If you're asking me right now, I think Barcelona are going to overhaul Atleti, and that is going to be, we're going to be talking about that as one of the big collapses in terms of leagues. It's not quite Newcastle and Manchester United in 96, but not far off.
And then finally, Bundesliga, JJ, everyone's played 26 games, so everyone has eight left. Almost feels like the title could be decided this weekend. Bayern have a four-point lead over second-place Leipzig. The two will meet on Saturday at 12:30 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN2, so you can watch that. Huge game with title ramifications. Also worth mentioning, Borussia Dortmund are 4 points out of fourth, chasing that Champions League spot, and they're chasing Eintracht Frankfurt, who hold that spot. They will also play this weekend, Saturday as well, 9:30 a.m. So a couple really, really big games in the Bundesliga coming back from the international break.
And let's be honest, Andrew, that game has massive ramifications for the future of Erling Haaland.
Although, I mean, do you under any circumstances expect him back there next season?
I do expect him back there, but
really,
yeah,
that would surprise me, especially, I mean, look, we've talked about Man City, and their need for a striker, and now, especially with Aguero leaving, you know, even more so, I think the urgency ratchets up a notch. So I would assume they'll be deeply in on him as a possible replacement,
as will Barcelona from what we're hearing.
Yeah.
So, but just talking to Jan Agafjordtoft, who has as good a knowledge as anyone on what's going on inside Team Haaland, if it is development that they're worried about and that's their major concern, then another season is needed, I would think.
That's about it right now. Obviously, next week on this podcast, we'll have a look at what goes on in those leagues. Before we get out, we have a quick mailbag, JJ.
A quick mailbag. Brian Baker. This is for Andrew. He's left me out of it. Do you think that the NCAA tournament would be improved or made less interesting? One, if rather than give the biggest schools the easiest road to the finals via seeding, the tournament brackets were randomly drawn as in soccer cups. And two, if the games were determined randomly, would you just allow all of the Division I schools to participate as in the FA Cup?
So this was the question, JJ, that I thought you were kind of subtweeting Grant Wall, because he caused the stir on Twitter when he suggested, he kind of threw out the suggestion that maybe the Champions League should have more of like a ranking system.
He said that this, any system that has what, Munich, who was he talking about? That has Bayern and PSG meeting not in the final is flawed. And he got absolutely walloped for that.
Yeah, he
like,
did.
He opened up his American brain and it was attacked.
So my answer to Brian Baker's question is that I am totally fine with the current format of the NCAA tournament. That's not necessarily to say that I agree with everything that Grant Wall said. I think some of what he says, I understand where he's coming from. The difference is with the NCAA tournament, I like the idea of rewarding teams for the quality of their regular season. You know, it adds importance to the regular season. And I think it's kind of like in sports, I just feel like generally that's the right thing to do. Like if you played well over the course of, you know, 25 plus games, once you get to your postseason, I think that you should be rewarded for having had a good 25 plus game regular season. So I'm fine with the current format. I would not change it.
Lorenzo. I'm Lorenzo from Canada, and I've been listening to your podcast since the 2018 World Cup. Thanks, Lorenzo. I wanted to send this email to confess my love for the international window. I understand I am in the minority. I don't know. But wanted to explain to you why I love them so much, and maybe my reasoning will change the opinion of yours on them. We literally did a podcast last week, Lorenzo, talking about how we were embracing this.
Oh, my God.
I mean, come on. growing up, I loved following World Cup qualification because I love the idea of how a world with so many different cultures could come together through one sport, with every team in qualifying having the dream of lifting that glorious golden trophy. Albeit some countries have better chances than others. Not only did I love to follow how my teams Canada and Italy play, but I was also interested in what was happening elsewhere in the world, whether it be in Bhutan or Madagascar. I was so interested in the results of qualifying around the world, I was able to memorize every FIFA nation's flag. I will say that being young and following soccer is the best thing for geography. Honestly, it's like Christmas for me every time there is an international window, and I look forward to seeing which giants of each respective region will be knocked out early. Cough, 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 the USA. All right, steady on. And which minnows will qualify for the World Cup and bring unexpected joy to their nation. I hope my message just moved your opinions on the international window just a little bit. Keep up the great work on the pod and don't be afraid to take a break once in a while. Never do. Haven't missed a week in how many years?
Not once ever. Have not missed a week ever.
Yeah. Take that, every other podcast. Keep safe out there in the pandemic. Thank you, Lorenzo. I totally get that. And that's how I was. And my introduction into soccer was through the Irish national team.
Yeah, same for me with the US.
Completely understand that. And it's very, very true. And there's just sometimes that the friendlies, Lorenzo, they just seem so pointless. Like Ireland are playing Qatar tonight. And the biggest talking point about that will be whether the Irish team players will have some kind of protest about the upcoming World Cup in Qatar. It won't be about the game, although it might be about the game because Ireland need a win so badly.
Look, some of it also has to do, I think, with the nature of your teams during any given moment. Like, yeah, for me, when the U.S. were going through their brutal stretch, yeah, the international breaks weren't as much fun. It was a lot harder to get up for a U.S. friendly when the U.S. were also playing terribly and had a group of players that I didn't particularly love. Now, they're awesome. I mean, the player, like, I love this group of players. We seem to be pretty good, at least compared to what we were a few years ago. Suddenly it's more fun and a lot easier to get up for. So I think that has a lot to do with, like, I think that's the case in most sports. Like, you know, when the Sixers are awesome and I'm like watching a huge Sixers game, and like the next day, if the Phillies are terrible and they have a game, it's like, oh, all right, got to get up for this one now. Like, when do the Sixers play again? You know? So like, yeah. I think that that's just kind of normal human nature. We don't hate the international breaks. Like you said, we just did a podcast last week where I think we used the words, thank God for this international break. But sometimes, you know, when our club teams are flying and like it's at a peak moment in the season, like we kind of don't want to leave that. And the international breaks sometimes force you to do that. So it ebbs and flows, JJ, just like all things in life.
Yeah. Sun up, sun down.
Mm-hmm. There you go. That's about it. That's about it on this international break. It's a sundown moment.
It is indeed.
Back to domestic league action coming up this weekend. Like we just pointed out, there's a lot of good stuff that we will be getting into with that next week. There's also, we're not out of the international break just yet. In terms of our podcast, we are. We won't have another one, but there are still important games being played over the next couple of days. So keep your eyes open for that Wednesday. I know there's a huge slate, England back in action, like we said, against Poland. So lots still to watch before the international break officially ends.
You know, the way we said we were living, or at least residing briefly in your case, on Humble Island at the start of the podcast. Well, I'm going to Staten Island tomorrow to receive my first round of the COVID-19 vaccine.
Wow, nice.
It opened up for everybody basically today. And it's impossible to get anything anywhere.
I don't know how you did it. I've been hearing from other friends who are just like, how, I don't know what to do. This is impossible.
Yep.
I mean, we're literally talking about millions of people all at once desperately seeking these things.
Yeah, I gave up on Brooklyn very, very quickly. And you know me, I'm a hardcore Brooklynite.
To the point where you won't leave Brooklyn for a vaccine pandemic?
Andrew, I literally didn't look. I hit the first date, the first time, and the first place that came up on the CVS app or CVS website or whatever I was doing on it, and I just clicked. I didn't care. I don't care, nor should you. If you can get there, if it's possible for you to get wherever you can get a vaccine available, go and get it.
That's a good message to end on, my friend. This was fun. Enjoyed talking about the U.S. men's senior team. Not quite as much the under-23s, but it's important. It's important to talk these things through.
This is ranking low on our pandemic podcast, which I think would be brilliant. Yeah, this one, I'm...
Oh, that's sad. I wonder if everyone agrees.
No. I think people are going to enjoy it, but you know, having to go through Humble Island was difficult for me.
Maybe we should do another time machine game. Will that help?
No.
We can do a time machine to Ireland. Was it Ireland, Netherlands that you loved? Or
oh yeah, we could do that. Yeah. That'd cheer me up.
Okay. Maybe next time.
I might spend the day pretending it's 2001. Good idea.
You should really get into character. See how people around you react to that. I'm sure they'll love it. Yeah. Well, hey, this was fun, man. To you, I say...
Check you later, fun boy.
See ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Ten seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.